She's lost that loving feeling.
She's like, no, she hasn't.
Yes, she has.
She has not lost that love.
Goose, she's lost it,
Matt.
Come on. I hate it when she does that.
You're invited to the ultimate party that really takes the cake. Join the jet set and a glittering galaxy of all your favorite stars. Roger Moore, supermodel Claudia Schiffer, and a very special superstar. The place, Rome. The host, Valentino. His honored guest, La Liz. You won't believe your eyes as the king of hot couture lights up the eternal city.
Anymore when I kiss your lips. There's no tenderness like before in your fingertips. You're trying hard not to show it, baby. But baby, believe me, I know it's it. You've lost that loving feeling. Oh, that loving feeling. You've lost that loving feeling. Now it's gone, gone, gone. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Lifestyles of the rich and famous, television for unchallenged authority on wealth, prestige, and the good life.
This is Remlon Radio, the internet's ultimate authority on Led Zeppelin, The Firm, and Obstweedle. I say, what ho, this is Brian, Radioactive Gardener, coming to you from Ice Station Zeppelin, Remlon Towers, Dungeon Studio, in what USA Today called stupid cold, Hespeler, Ontario. You are listening to Remlon Radio, episode 85. Ramble On Radio is the only dedicated Led Zeppelin podcast on this or any other known internets. Be sure to go to RambleOnRadio.com for all your Led Zeppelin news, any links I mentioned during the show. You can subscribe to Ramble On Radio through iTunes. And if you do, leave a review. It's a helpful thing. You can listen on Spreaker, and if you're on Spreaker, even if you don't download the show there, be sure to follow Ramble On Radio. And check out Ramble On Radio on YouTube. You can follow Ramble On Radio on Facebook, Google Plus, and at Ramble On Blog on Twitter. And I was going to kill the YouTubes, you know. That was my decision for the week. And then I kind of went over to YouTube and looked, and like 20 some odd people watched the last time. And I didn't post the last episode, but I had 24 views there, which is more than I thought, you know. And everything else seemed to be showing in the 20s, which is an increase. That's not great. But it's actually an increase. The last time I looked, I was getting 2, 3, 5 views, and I'm seeing it's not worth it. But if it's increasing, if it's going up, yeah. So I'll keep an eye on it. Every couple of months, I'll look. As long as we're getting progress there, I'll keep posting them to YouTube, I think. And the same goes for Spreaker. Spreaker, really, I'm not getting much views, but I think. Like, there's no effort putting it on Spreaker, so I might as well just keep doing that. For now, anyway, it really takes me about 5 minutes. It's really just an upload. So if you're listening on Spreaker, if you watch on YouTube, for now, anyway, it's going to be. Now, I missed last week, so we're doing a double, because I'm crammed in with my topics. And it's not that I didn't have a topic last week, it's that I ran out of time. And frankly, almost ran out of time this week. But we're getting her in. So it's a double topic week this week. We're going to talk about the book Led Zeppelin on Led Zeppelin by Hank Bordowitz. And we're also going to be looking at The Firm. The album The Firm, which was released in... see how unprepared I am here? I have all sorts of notes and I have the wrong notes. It was released 30 years ago, 1985, February 1985. Let me get the right date. Discography. 1985, The Firm. Here we go. February 11th. So this is, there's 3 days left in January, so 2 weeks from today, actually, is when it was released. I got plans for February, as I've mentioned before, so we're not going to, in the middle of February, I won't be doing The Firm release. So anyway, yeah, so that's what we're going to talk about today. Intro was, for those who don't know, the intro was Maverick and Goose from Top Gun doing You've Lost That Loving Feeling, and Robin Leach and Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, which was quite a TV show in the 1980s for you kids who don't know. We all watched it at one point or another. And he literally took the TV cameras to Liz Taylor's place in Rome, that sort of thing. And you saw how the other half lived, to a degree anyway. And both are relevant to today's show. Well, You've Lost That Loving Feeling, The Firm. I'll get there. One story I wanted to mention, though. This is kind of from a week and a half ago, and nobody in the Led Zeppelin world, I didn't see it on any of the Facebook groups. I didn't see it on FBO, which is pretty much where I got my Led Zeppelin news from. I didn't see this. I certainly didn't post it. I considered posting a piece on it. We talked last time about Jimmy Page and the new girlfriend, the much younger girlfriend, and one of the British papers did a big article. I think it was the Daily Mail did a big article called Jimmy Page Cradle Robber, I think it was. And went into some depth on the age of his previous companions, including this one. And was rather a snarky little article. He will not have been pleased by it, I guarantee you this. but it brings up an issue that this is a whistle past the graveyard moment for all of us, really, for all us Led Zeppelin fans. In Britain, if you don't follow it, they've been going through it the last 4 years, 3 years, they've been going through this massive scandal regarding celebrities and underage girls. It all starts with a fella named Jimmy Savile, who was the presenter for Top of the Pops, a TV show on the BBC. And he was basically a pedophile, extreme pedophile, extreme predator. And it was ignored for 40, 50 years. And he's dead now. It was after his death this came out. But he basically used his shows on the BBC to give him access to young girls. And his celebrity stature to give him access to young girls and to cover. And he was really, really, really of the most despicable, vile kind of pedophile type. Real predator. And so there's been it's been a bit of a witch hunt over there. There's been a number of celebrities who've been charged with historical offenses, as they call it, who have been found not guilty. A couple of guys on Coronation Street spring immediately to mind. On the other hand, Gary Glitter got caught in this, and this week was guilty. Was in court this week, I think, but he was pleading guilty. He was throwing himself on the mercy of the court to a degree, and this is not his first such conviction, of course. He's probably the low-hanging fruit. So, but we know that, Jimmy and 14-year-old Laurie Maddox, we know about that. We know what went on in the 70s with these guys. Mostly not in Britain, it appears. I think when they were in Britain, their wives tended to be around, so the 14-year-old girls didn't. And they didn't spend a lot of time on BBC, so a lot of this stuff comes from girls they met on Top of the Pops. So they're not embroiled in it so much, but there's just such an eye on it right now. They're so aware of it in Britain right now that this article came out is not surprising. That it didn't come out sooner to a degree is surprising. I have for 2 years anyway been watching all these articles on this with an eye towards when's Led Zeppelin going to be named, because it was bound to happen. And that happened last week. So it's the article's called Jimmy Page Cradle Robber, I think. And it's quite it looks at his past relationships with a scandalous eye. We'll say that way. It's not an approving article. All right. That's about it. That's it. Goodbye. See ya. Bye. All 11 minutes of the podcast. There we go. That's about it for new news, really, other than Jason Bonham's added a few dates here and there. Still not, We still don't have much in the Eastern dates. Western dates through March are pretty set, and there's a number of them. Western and Midwest, even, I think. They come into that kind of area. I'm trying to think, but how far Kansas do they come to? I don't have it off top. But there's more dates added. If you go to Ticketmaster and search Jason Bonham, it's the easiest way. It shows you what tickets are officially, what shows are officially announced. There's a couple in the New York area in May. New Jersey, New York, yeah, that sort of stuff. Nothing outside of that immediate area yet, I imagine. They always make it up to Toronto, for instance. Always do. I imagine that's happening. I imagine they'll make it here. All right, so the book is called Led Zeppelin on Led Zeppelin. It's not really by Hank Bordowitz, by the way. It is edited by Hank Bordowitz, I think. If you're on YouTube, I'm going to do this. There, it's on my iPad, but there's the cover. It's called Led Zeppelin on Led Zeppelin, Interviews and Encounters. And it basically takes Led Zeppelin interviews through the years and represents them. It gives fairly verbatim. Some of them are excellent and some of them are awful. There's a radio interview, a long radio interview in Australia that's such a common, and maybe it made sense if you were listening to it, but people come in and out, you can't keep track of who's what. The guys are talking, they're talking about songs that are played in between, kind of running through their, you know, they're playing songs that the guys like, Jimmy and Robert, are on the, but it's just, it's a big, reading it, it's a mess. It's an awful moment, you know. But there's some early stuff by Richie York, which is really good. You kind of get the sense, wow, this is why Richie York's a good writer. This is why, see, I'm having one of those moments. Nick Kent, you know, here's why Nick Kent is a good writer, you know. You're reading his stuff going, wow, this is really good. This is really interesting. On the other hand, one of the things this book does really nicely, it almost presents a biography of how the band is seen through the eyes of the press. So the beginning interviews are, they're introducing the band almost, right? They talk about nice young men, they're intelligent, they're this or that. By the, you know, by 71, those kind of things are gone, and you're talking more about the music. Through the 70s, they talk a lot about the fame, they talk about the sellouts. In 1979, there's a piece in New Music Express, which is a horrific, it's an interview with Page, and it's an horrific hack job. It's brutal. And it's looking back on it now, it's an awful written piece. It's an awful piece. I'm sure they thought it was clever, funny, and interesting then. And you wonder why New Music Express didn't get invited to Nebworth. All you have to do is read this piece and go, holy fuck, I wouldn't invite them either. I wouldn't invite them to my funeral. If I was Led Zeppelin, and we should add that, but it's just, it gives a real preview of how these people thought at the time. And I have written, actually, my kind of note on it is, holy shit, holy crap, what a pile of shit article. Not safe for work. I should, maybe I said that before. But that's kind of my note on it. And I've started writing a review, and I think my point in the review was something along the lines of, if you didn't need to know anything about playing a musical instrument to be in a punk band, this article proves, you know, this Chris Salowitz's article in New Music Express proves that you didn't need to know anything about writing to be a critic for New Music Express at the time. Something along those lines, you know. It's an awful piece. It really is. Where he acknowledged right off the bat, he was offered originally a preview of the In Through the Outdoor album, and then that was then the call came, no, that we're not going to do that. That's not going to happen. And he says that's probably a good thing because I wouldn't have liked it anyway. You know, he's not even heard a note of it, and he's already made up his mind what it was like. And that's the way the article runs the whole way. It's awful. And then through the 80s, you start to feel You know, they're kind of discussing Led Zeppelin as an historic interest rather than as, a legend. They're not a legendary band so much as they're an historical band. They're an albatross. The interviews with Robert Plant around that time talk about it almost like an albatross. And then after Live Aid, you start to see they become more legendary. They become more a historically great band. Sorry, YouTube guys. So the tone starts changing in the late 80s. And then into the 90s with Page and Plant. It's an interesting, they're active, interesting musicians at that time. And Page and Zeppelin is part of the resume more than it's a burden or it's a legend, right? It's part of who they are. And it's, it was only something that was 15 years before, right? At that time. And then, of course, after Page and Plant, they start becoming this truly legendary act, right? They're up there with the Beatles and the Stones and but it's an interesting read from that. Now, because it's an interview and an interview and an interview and an interview, there are times when it's a great read. There are times when you fly through, this is a great interview. And there are times when you struggle. There was one interview, the Australia radio interview, I think took me 2-3 days to get through. I just kept having to put it down. And I don't know if I actually finished it. And then you get past it and you're flowing along again. Then you hit another one and you go, oh God, this one's terrible. So I wouldn't say it's a good book or a bad book. It's an interesting book. And it's, if you're a Zeppelin fan, it's probably a worth it book. But, in terms of, like I say, the quality of the writing is mixed. So it's not a good book because there's too many moments when it's not good. But it's not a bad book because there's too many moments that are great too. It's just the nature of the beast, unfortunately, with that, you know. Anyway, I highlighted a bunch of quotes, and I'm going to run through as many as I can. For their historical interest or because they say something that's still relevant now, in many cases, or that highlight this point that I'm making, that it's you were seeing how the band was viewed through the press. The very first interviews in Go Magazine. December 27, 1968, Go Magazine was founded by Robin Leach, British expatriate Robin Leach of Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. He was actually and got a major column or some such on one of the big British papers. He was an extremely successful writer very early in life and then moved to the States. And eventually moved up the ladder to TV. And this interview is actually with Robin Leach as well. And it's really, as is many of the cases with this, it's an interview, it's an article slash interview. In other words, it's not a question and answer. He's interviewed him and then he's slipping his quotes into the article. So talking about the Yardbird split, Jimmy, quote, found too much friction working with them. Quote, they were too much into their own bag. They were great at experimenting, allowing me to move in and out of expression every good musician needs, but they started to get erratic. Sometimes we would play at concerts and the audience would want to hear some of our older songs, the ones that were hits, but the guys didn't want to do them. They just wanted to do their own stuff, solos and the like. And so that's kind of Jimmy's take in 1968, 6 months later sort of thing, on the end of the Yardbirds. And I like this one. This one I just laughed at. The new Yardbirds took a little while to find. The new Yardbirds being Led Zeppelin, right? Because Jimmy Page wanted to get the best. After 3 weeks of constant searching, he still had nothing. But 1 week later, the whole group was formed. So it took a little while to find, as in 4 weeks. Three of which was searching, one of which was finding. You know. 4 weeks is nothing, right? 4 weeks is nothing. And this is his, again, same interview, 1968. We can do all kinds of styles of music. This is Led Zeppelin he's talking about. So we're not restricted to any one thing. We want to get an act that will allow free movement. I mean, we play sometimes and say one of us just feels like playing one type of piece. Likely not as we will. So we can all do it together. These things are not planned, et cetera, et cetera. So he's talking already about the improvisational nature of their live act in December 1968, their first trip to the States. Okay. This one fell into the ha-ha category. Page from 1968, from Mark Williams, April 69, sorry. Page seems to be evolving into the dominant personality of the band as far as publicity and teen appeal go. Which is sad because the group are excessively proficient in their own scenes, and I personally don't think that Page has, this is where the laugh came from, sufficient character as an individual to rise above the others in terms of star appeal. maybe that's not right. But in hindsight, easy to say, right? He was a bit of a shy guy, and it'd be easy to see, not to see. What Page was going to bring to the table charisma-wise. You can't almost predict that sort of thing, you know? Richie York, Toronto writer, Glowy, he wrote a book on them in the 70s, one that's got the Pez dispensers on front. Led Zeppelin, I think it ends like. Richie York wrote a couple of great interviews. This one's in 69. There's another couple. I think he interviews everybody in the band in 71. It's for the Toronto's Globe and Mail, which is a local paper. And this is just during the interview, he's in talking to Page, and it's he's in the studio. The track he was mixing, called Bring It On Home, sounded like Sonny Boy Williams mixed with Jimmy Page. Actually, it was Led Zeppelin's lead singer, Robert Plant, trying to sound like Williamson and doing a pretty fine job of it. So that's before the album comes out. That's the point there, that he was sitting in the studio listening, and that's kind of his take on it. On Bring It On Home before it. This is a theme that comes up early days, by the way. And this is why I wanted to mention this. And I'll mention it 3 or 4 times. And later on, a year or two down the road, Robert Plant is addressing this himself rather sneerily. But this point comes up again and again, and I wanted to hit on it. One reason is the emergence of singer Robert Plant as the most significant sex idol since Jim Morrison. Initially, Led Zeppelin was all Page, but now, with Plant doing a great job of turning on the girls, the band has found a much wider acceptance. The bit about Plant being a sex symbol, and this is still the Richie York article, is relevant. The bit about, Plant taking over part of the lead man part, it's fine. The comparisons to Jimmy Morrison, I find weird. But throughout the early years, there's these comparisons to Jim Morrison and to the Doors, the band to the Doors. And I don't get that. But I don't like the Doors very much. So, I like this. This is a jazz writer by the name of, I gotta find it here. Oh, damn, sometimes these things are messy. Valerie Wilmer. Jimmy Page talks about Led Zeppelin. And Wilmer is a more jazz writer than anything. And one of the things she talks about throughout her interview is, the jazz influence that pops in, especially Bonham. She notices Bonham's... that Jones and Bonham are both the jazzy people, but Bonham's got that influence from the jazzers. But she does say of Page, Jimmy Page is one of the most affable, easygoing people in the world of progressive music, as relaxed and beautiful offstage as he is tormented and angry in front of the crowd. Kind of something you don't hear, and that's 1970, by the way. Kind of something you don't hear. In the early days, I picked up on this a fair bit, that Page is a nice guy, very pleasant young man, etc., etc. Not something you heard later on. It's not something that rings to my knowledge of the history of Page that he's a particularly affable and pleasant man. So you wonder if that changed as the fame came. Very likely, I suppose. Here's March 1970, Robert Plant talking to Circus Magazine on the Jim Morrison's. It's a fairly long piece. It has, besides having long articles, it has what bits called communication breakdown. It's a little square, and it'll be a paragraph from an interview that says something reasonably relevant at the time period. So instead of presenting a whole interview, they often present a little bit. At the end of every interview, there's two or three of these communication breakdowns. This is one of those. This is from Circus Magazine in March 1970 on Jim Morrison. I don't mean any disrespect. I suppose he's very nice, but it's strange. I don't like the way he plays on everyone's head. I think entertainment should be light. He seems to take himself too seriously. And here we go. April 1970, Richie York spent quite a bit of time with the band during this period, my quote says. And this is, he does like four interviews, and they were presented a week apart in the paper. First one's with John Paul Jones. I thought this was fun. He's talking about, this is Richie York in 1970 talking about. Says, meanwhile, the Zep had arrived and hit and left the charts coated with the debris of a hard rock hurricane. The Zep, Z-E-P-P. And Hank Bordowitz put in here the sick tag. If you know what that is, editors use it to indicate that there's a mistake, and it's not my mistake. Basically, writers will put it in. So if you're quoting somebody, or if you're quoting a book and something's spelled wrong, or you're quoting an article and something's spelled wrong, you put in the little sick tag to indicate that it's not my spelling mistake. So that's what he's done here. Z-E-P-P, he's put a little sick beside. But hey, this is 1970. Nobody had, you know, maybe Richie York's the first guy to call them Zep in print, and therefore everything since has been wrong. Z-E-P is wrong. It should be Z-E-P-P. There's no right or wrong, certainly at that stage, and as you're shorten it to what you want. It's not an error, really, is it? But anyway, I thought that was it. I just thought that was interesting, that, you know, that was not, it is fairly standardized now to be Z-E-P if you were writing Zep. But Richie York thought the two P's was appropriate. And then he talks immediately after about their concert price has gone. This is March 1970, so a year later, their concert price has gone from $250,000 to $225,000. And the second album's out, and a single, Whole Lot of Love, went very close to a million. Interesting that he talks about a single, when the band kind of historically has said, well, we never do a single. Do you think? Anyway, this was interesting. This was interesting, relevant to history. John Paul Jones, if anybody had to leave, the group would have to split up. Each of us is irreplaceable to this band. That's an interesting quote based on the fact that they did, in fact, split up with John Bonham. And you know, there's been lots of talk of them not splitting up. You know, there's... you know, Jonesy is the one guy who apparently quite often for a long time, and it gets into the relationships later on between them. And I've got some of those quotes. But yeah, it was just interesting that, he thought if any one of us left, it would be the end of it. And it ultimately was. So he was plant on Jim Morrison again, to Richie York again. It's like a big play act, and we mustn't play act, otherwise we'll run away with ourselves like Jim Morrison did. This is, of course, after Jim Morrison's dead, right? And do you think Morrison takes himself too seriously? I guess he's not dead yet. Oh, yeah, we played with the Doors once in Seattle, and it seemed like he was screwed up. He was giving the impression he was really deep into things, like Skip Spence and Moby Grape. You can get into a trip of your own, and you don't realize what's going on in the outside world. And he goes, and there's a bit more, but and here's another Morrison quote. This is Jimmy Page, actually. Another Morrison question. And here's my note is, another Morrison question. Does anybody seriously complain of the Doors to Led Zeppelin? Seriously? That's my little note on the sidebar. And Jimmy Page, how about the Doors? Richie York asked. Actually, I was surprised after hearing a lot of the Doors that we get a lot of advanced publicity in England. My sexy Jim Morrison was, how virile and whatever. I was surprised to see how static he was live on stage. I admire his writing ability. I don't. And when he gets it together in a studio, he really does. But on stage, he's not really for me. He doesn't really come across like any way I'd like to see. Being dressed in black leather can only go so far, but standing there like my father would on a stage really doesn't come across for me. So, I think that might be the end of the Morrison quotes, but it was an interesting comparison that came up a lot early that I would have thought of. This is again Jimmy Page with Richie York in April 1970. This is after the second album, before the third album. We've got something we want to try, but I don't want to tell you about it in case it doesn't come off. It's an idea for a really long track on the next album. It's so much that Dazed and Confused and all those things went into sections. Well, we want to try something with the new organ and acoustic guitar building up to the electric thing. It'll probably be a 50-minute track, and I'm really looking forward to doing it. I can't really tell you more about it in that case it doesn't work out, but I think it will. That's 1970. He's talking about Stairway to Heaven. Two albums before it happened. It wouldn't happen on the next album. It would happen on the album after. Nick Kent, one of the best. This is Nick Kent. And we get into... let me see where we're at. New York. December 1972, in New Music Express, Nick Kent. So this is when they're doing their little tour around England, Birmingham, into Scotland, that sort of thing. I just like this line about their security. These two tough, short-haired guys sitting in the corner aren't there to look picturesque. Oh no, their security and they're best at their job. They've just finished working on the Osmonds tour. That was just a good take on it, you know. And this I thought was one of the most interesting points in the book. And this is again Nick Kent. Sure, we all know the names of the members and the fact that Jimmy Page used to be in the Yardbirds. Otherwise, the Zepp charisma, Zepp with one P by the way, Zepp charisma exists almost solely in the music and the band's onstage persona. Now we're moving into 1973 tour. The most impressive numbers of the live show are the new songs, Dancing Days and The Song Remains the Same. And I wondered if, did they ever do Dancing Days live? I'm not sure. I got a 274. I got to look up who this one is. 274. Nick Kent again. The Led Zeppelin Road Test from February 24, 1973. Dancing Days and The Song Remains the Same, / The Rain Song. I'm guessing he was talking about the ocean. Did they ever do Dancing Days live? I don't know. This is from the Presence album. And this is just relevant because remember recently Jimmy Page in an interview got asked about his drug use and stuff. And he said, oh, that was all overstated, blah, 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 blah. This is actually from the Presence sessions. This is the famous story during Achilles' Last Stand when Robert kind of got a little excited, fell off a stool, and he was in a cast still at the time. And they were worried that he'd broken his leg, re-broken the leg. Robert says, I'd never known Jimmy to move so quickly. He was out of the mixing booth and holding me up, quote, in bold, my bold, fragile as he might be, within a second. That's an interesting quote. That you can read a lot into that, and I just did. Robert Plant talking about, and we're going into Yeah, so this is after Presence. This is like 76, 77, 76. Stairway to Heaven has been the most requested track on FM radio here in America, which is amazing because it's so old now. It was 5 years old. For you guys who weren't there in the 70s, though, I mean, rock and roll was about 20 years old. So 5 years was a long time in the span of things. And we did consider, you know, a song from 1971 in 1977 to be an old song. And now something from 10 years ago, you kind of think, well, it's a fairly recent song. Okay, so then we get to Chris Sailowitz in the New Music Express, August 4, 1979. And it's just a horrifically bad article. It's a hack job right across the board. He went in to knock Page down a few pegs, and he did. And that's what it was all about. Almost everything about it, it was just brutal reading. And it makes you understand why they kind of went, well, I hate these punk guys. Okay, so this is from Coda. Page acknowledges there may be scraps of tape around, but Led Zeppelin will never play or record again. And quote. And I laughed at this one. And there's a personal story in here. The other inevitable question. This is 1982. And this is an inevitable question in 1982. If you interviewed Led Zeppelin now, the inevitable question is that annoys everybody is there going to be a reunion? Guys going to get back together? In 1982, the inevitable question was about the recent accusations from California evangelists that secret satanic messages were subliminally buried in the music of a number of rock songs, including Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven. Oh, it's such an idiotic thing when you look back on it. And it was such a big thing in the 80s. I was in about 76, 77. We had neighbors who were extremely religious. My mother went to Ireland. And my dad was... he was just looking after us. But he wasn't a cook, and he wasn't... he did his bit, you know. He wasn't one of those dads who came home, popped open a beer, and plunked in front of the TV, or at least, you know, not so much the beer, and A and B, not until after dinner. But he wasn't the cook of the house, and he didn't feed us and stuff. So the neighbors decided, you know, we'll have them over for dinner. And they planned an evening of entertainment that included a lecture at the church on the evils of rock and roll. And this guy came in, and he was talking about satanic messages in the music. I'm going to say it was 75, maybe 76. He talked a lot about Alice Cooper's Welcome to My Nightmare, I recall, and it was fairly new at the time. So this sort of stuff had been around along 6, 7, 8 years then, but it really built up in the early 80s. I don't know why, and it was idiotic, and most people laughed at it, but these people seemed to have enough of an influence. Okay, so this is one of the communication breakdowns. Actually, this is the one I did. I want to get away from this. This is the one I did last week. I talked about with Jimmy, and there's one about the cabaret line. I got a little... Every once in a while, I quoted one that really... And I got a little note to myself, but it means nothing to you. And that's what I'm just finding. Here we go. Robert Plant, in the later years, the one thing that comes out in these articles is the relationship between the guys. And I want to get into that a bit. Clearly through the band, it was a time strain. It was a relationship. Good and bad, but it worked. So what's John Paul Jones doing today? Robert Plant is asked. And when do you think this was? 1983. Synthing himself into paradise. Synthing as in synthesizers. Himself into paradise, he laughs. Oh, is there a record due? I believe so, yeah. He looks away. I don't hear from him very much. In the interview says, well, I know you guys never really hung out with each other. Yeah, he says, well, you can saturate a relationship if you're not careful. That's kind of, there's a strain. So 83, there's a strain in the Jones relationship, right? Here we go. This is another 83. Think about it. Of all the bands, Led Zeppelin could have exploited their audience much more than any other. Yet in retrospect, there hasn't been that album that they'd just as soon forget about, that tour undertaken for purely financial gain, so screw the fans. Last year's Coda seemed more an interesting artifact than a grapple for dollars, and personally left me admiring the band for not milking their audience dry with another more substandard, etc., etc. That's the point, is the, as I mentioned, the conversation is changing. Remember, 1979 was the hack job and what dinosaurs they were. 1983, now they're talking about how incredible they were. And that's a conversation that consistently moves in that direction from the 80s on. It gets more and more so. I laughed at this one. They talk about... I think what's happened over the years is... This is Robert Plant. What's happened over the years is that... What sense of humor I've got has passed over the top of most people's heads. So when I'm stating things, maybe at the time when I've been fooling around, it's taken quite seriously. You know, this is I'm trying to think. 1983 again? Yeah, still 83. So here we are 32 years later. He still hasn't learned this lesson. He says it here, but he still hasn't learned this lesson. This is what gets him in trouble. He wants to say things kind of lightly, and people don't take things lightly. this from The Firm. This is an interview with Jimmy Page around The Firm days. He is back with a great new band called The Firm. This is by Chris Welch and Cream Magazine, by the way. So The Firm were a great band in that time frame. Here is, again, Plant in 1988. On Mr. Jones. He has had annual telephone calls from John Paul Jones, whom he never sees, suggesting that Led Zeppelin reform. Jonesy always was a breadhead. And that's a quote. Sorry, you know what? The quote in the middle of it is from Plant. Jonesy always was a breadhead. The line is, he has had annual telephone calls from John Paul Jones, whom he never sees, suggesting that Led Zeppelin reform, and he has treated these with contempt. And that's 1988. He's looking at the Now and Zen. We're talking about these. It's a Now and Zen interview session. All these interviews happen around albums, right? They don't happen when there's nothing going. So they're talking about Now and Zen. They're talking about The Firm. They're talking. You know, that's why you're getting them. Okay. I talked a few weeks ago. I highlighted this one for this specific reason. I talked a few weeks ago. He says stuff. Plant goes off and says stuff. And you have no idea what he means. And does he? He just seems to talk, and people accept it as if he's making sense. On the breakup of Led Zeppelin, because I knew how much Bonzo loved what he did, and I thought it would be terrible just to fob the whole thing off and say, "Well, that's it. So far, so good." Right? Here it is. We'd better get someone else now, so that we can carry on this incredible sort of amoebic carnage game, you know. And my line is amoebic, my note to myself is amoebic carnage game? ? No, Robert, I don't know. It's one of those things he says, where you go, huh? What the hell's an amoebic carnage game? So anyway, I get what he's talking about with going on without Bonzo. This is 1988 again, by the way, still. And this one was interesting. This was on, if you've read Stephen Davis's book, The Hammer of the Gods, or Richard Cole's book, Stairway to Heaven, this is on, Davis got most of his information from Cole, and then Cole decided to write his own book anyway. This is Plant's take on Hammer of the Gods. A lot of what he remembers about Zeppelin wasn't about Zeppelin at all. I think a lot of his recollections were confused with memories from when he was with Vanilla Fudge or the Young Rascal or Hendrix. Of course, Zeppelin had many moments of outrage to sort of dimension, but somebody else would write a better book, I think. A funnier book, because 90% of what we got up to was just funny. There's a bit more. Richard possesses an inherent bitterness because he was a constant position of absorbing and reflecting glory without ever being given the reins of authority. Because he was always second in command, so-and-so. But, yeah, the take is, the Led Zeppelin story was really more amusing than what has been presented in those books. It's interesting. I like this. This is, I think, Page. Let me see if I can figure that out. 537. 537. Page 537, by the way. No, Robert Plant. Let me see. Yes, Robert. This is Robert Plant. In 1988. Talking about Live Aids. Jonesy stood there serene as hell, and the two drummers proved that well. That's why Led Zeppelin didn't carry on. Quite a long quote, actually, but that's the gist that was interesting. You know, it just wasn't very good without Jones, without Bonham at that point. Which is a fair assessment, maybe. And maybe what we talked last time about, he went on to, that they did... yeah, I'm going to miss it all again. But they did do some rehearsals with the drummer after Live Aid. And Tony Thompson, I think it was. And after Tony Thompson had a car accident, Plant walked away from it all. But maybe what he felt, too, is without, it's just not the same here. It may well be what he felt. Another thing that comes up, starts to come up around this time frame, is... Robert Plant's Knockdown. This is the 80s again, late 80s still. David Coverdale, the Knockdowns of David Coverdale. I mean, last night while I was crouching, leaping up in there and doing Spiral as I came down again, I thought, I wonder if David Coverdale does that yet. Oh. And here's another David Coverdale one. It's become so corporate again. It's just like the early 60s, this situation where David Coverdale is mainly concerned with how he wears his sunglasses or whatever. It was on the record industry, really, but there you go. Something for you thinking about here. This one, Outrider was. This is now Page on Outrider. The Outrider interviews. Outrider was recorded over a 9-month period and was originally intended to be a double offering. It was going to be a double album, and that, I suppose, also took up some of the 9-month period because I recorded enough tracks to make it a double album. Page said in the interview. So, which suggests we can expect possibly a deluxe edition of Outrider sometime soon. You think? Talking about working with David Coverdale in 1993, I was fully aware of the work I did in the 80s. Certainly wasn't of the quality of Zeppelin, but that wasn't necessarily my own fault. The other components weren't there. I didn't feel I had the right pieces, but working with Coverdale was a totally different thing. And I will get into this a bit in a few minutes with the firm. ...1998 in the Walking to Clarksdale, this interview, it's an interview, but this is the intro from Guitar Magazine. Jimmy Page is the only rock guitar icon from blues-based British Invasion who still matters. Think about it. And he goes on to say, Hendrix is dead. Jeff Beck, Eric Clapton, and Page. Hendrix is gone. Clapton is, well, doing whatever Clapton does. And Beck is kind of, now, Beck has become much more relevant in recent years. You know, Beck had a hard time concentrating on just being a guitar player at times, right? Okay, on the Jones stuff. This is an interview with John Paul Jones this is on them doing Page and Plant without him. I mean, we see each other for business purposes and meetings and stuff like that, and as well, let's just say it's formal. I did like this. John Paul Jones. What's the dynamic like between you and John Bonham? What was the dynamic like between you and John Bonham as a rock rhythm section? Well, we were like a lot of, we weren't like a lot of rock rhythm sections. We swung like a bastard. He's right. I'm missing a couple of quotes on Jonesy talking about. Okay, here it goes. This is actually Jimmy Page again on the relationship. This is about after the O2. Well, earlier this year, we had this clandestine to get together. There had been a bit of a rift between us, so we had to find out if it could work or if there was too much water under the bridge. So you get the feelings, and like I say, some of the Jones quotes throughout, some of the Plant quotes about Jones indicate they don't like each other very much. Some of the Jones quotes in the post-Page Plant area indicate he was... like say formal. Everything was very formal. Okay, I'll talk to you, but for one reason only. And finally, this comes from Robert Plant for the O2 show. The future of the 21st century Led Zeppelin seems very much in the air. Plant has said, sorry, this is from an interview before the O2 show, a story on by Alan Light in MSN Music. Getting the lead out, Jimmy Page, John Paul Jones on Led Zeppelin, historic reunion. The future of the 21st Led Zeppelin seems very much in the air. Plant has said that he considers the O2 show a one-time thing, while Page has left the door open for more work going forward. For now, though, Page and Jones sound genuinely excited about the band's return to the stage, raving about a secret rehearsal they did late last spring to test the water. So this is before the O2 show, and Plant was then calling it a one-off. So those of us, and I've never really knocked Plant for not doing the reunion. Any criticism really comes down to the way he communicated it, I think. There's before the show. He's saying, that was before the show. That was out in the press. It will be a one-off. So it's kind of hard to knock Plant for... If everyone else decided to interpret something else into it, that's kind of hard to knock. The last word goes to John Paul Jones. A lot have made of the salacious reputation of the band, which always detracted from the music. That was always disappointing, especially newspapers. They would always start talking about sharks or whatever. And I always think, oh God, why does nobody mention how good the band was? And just my note in the sidebar was this in capital letters with 3 exclamation marks. This. Why does nobody mention how good the band was? And I've talked about this before. The shark story comes up in a book. The book goes down in my estimation, big time. It really hurts the quality of the book. Because the shark story is not relevant. Oh, it's snowing. Snowing. Oh, shit. Quite a bit, too, and I gotta drive an hour. I'll drive for like an hour. In an hour. Yeah, it's not gonna be a fun drive, that's for sure. Alright, and we're an hour into this already, almost. This is a long one. This one's a long one. I knew that would take a while. But I'm really kind of determined to do Physical Graffiti Month. And I don't even know if I'm going to end up doing a full Physical Graffiti Month. But anyway, we are on The Firm. The Firm. The very first album of The Firm. Jimmy Page. Paul Rodgers. Tony Franklin. And Chris Slade. Chris Slade would be the drummer. Tony Franklin, the annoying bassist. And I will get to that. I'm going to go through this song by song. Yeah, I'm just going to get there quick. Look, this is a good album. I was surprised in the listening to it in the last couple of weeks how much I enjoyed it. Because I remember getting it and not enjoying it at the time. I mean, I bought this in 1985. And I remember not enjoying it. I always liked Radioactive. And there's a few other songs, but kind of listening to them the last couple of nights, you go, oh, that's actually a really good song. That's actually a really good song. But there is a few dogs on it. Anyway, let's go song by song. We'll go over Closer, which is a great Page, a good rock, a great Page lick. It really is a solid song. Make or Break. It's got a kind of a slower page guitar break at the beginning, and then the voice comes in, and it's another really good one. It builds and builds and builds into a good solid rocker. Now here's the third song is Someone to Love. Here's the thing. More than anything else, horrifically bad bass sound. Tony Franklin uses a fretless bass. And it's got this wow sound to it. And at times it's frigging awful. And it really ruins much of this album, I think. And Someone to Love is the first one. Someone to Love is the one where you go, oh, God, what is that? It just sounds awful. And the next, Together is the next song. I got my note is pretty song, more awful bass. This one might be ruined by the bass, and it is. It's just ruined by the bass. It's a terrible bass sound, and it's way up in the mix, and it's just awful. Ruins, it does so much to hurt this album. Radioactive, love, love, love. I just have always dug that song. It's so good. Then we get to it. You've Lost That Loving Feeling. I refer to this as the album killer. And again, the bass sound is just way up front. And there's nothing interesting going on here, guitarists. There's nothing interesting going on here. And it's an album killer. It really is. And my quote is, I prefer Maverick and Goose. And that's why you got them at the intro, by the way. That's you know, that was the boys from Top Gun singing. You Lost That Loving Feeling in the intro. That's why. It's a better version than this. And that's saying something, because that's a friggin' awful. Tom Cruise can't sing. And while Paul Rogers' vocals are fine on this, the rest of it is just it's so bad. And Money Can't Buy is another one. Okay Song, horrible bass sound. Page has some interesting guitar lines in Money Can't Buy, though. And then Satisfaction Guaranteed. I really liked Satisfaction Guaranteed. It's the firm sound I like, quote unquote. The voice is way up front, so the voice isn't kind of pulled back. And it has a good groove, and the bass sounds good. Like, the bass sounds like a bass player. And he's locking in with the drummer. And Page is adding color all over the place. And it's what these guys could have been much more so. And I really like Satisfaction Guaranteed. And I like Midnight Moonlight. It's a classic Page craftsmanship. I think Midnight Moonlight. Was Midnight Moonlight, was that Swan Song? It was the one Page brought to the table as Swan Song. Who knows? I believe it is. Yes. It was tinkered at during the Physical Graffiti sessions. And it sounds like it. It's got the great composition. It's a fabulous layered song. And then I have in my notes on it, damn bass. It's this great Page craftsmanship. And then that stupid bass sound is running in through it. But it doesn't ruin it as it does some of the other songs. So I like this album, but it's one that I'll put away and not listen to for ages. And I don't ever really know why. It's got its moments. The first side is really good. Let's be blunt on that. The second side is hurt by those other two songs. If you took Someone to Love and Together out of the first side and moved to Satisfaction Guaranteed and Midnight Moonlight there, you'd have an excellent side, and then you'd have the crap side. My kind of recollection of 1985 is I got to You Lost That Love and Feeling, and went, oh, God, what is going on here? And no knowledge that it was a fretless bass, what was happening with it. It was just like, what is that sound? It's terrible. And but there's many, there's been a number of things through the years. Paul Rogers has said, and others have said, it was meant to be a two-album band. It was meant to be a road band. They would do two albums. It was a two-album commitment from both Page and Rogers, and they did two albums. The intention was a couple of tours, and the intention was to get Page working. That's the reason Paul Rogers does it. And when we talked earlier a little tiny bit about Page's quote-unquote problems, how fragile he is. And a couple of weeks back when he got upset again in an interviewer, Chuck Klosterman, who kind of brought up how fragile he was due to the drugs, Paul Rodgers is on record as having said he's seen Paul Kostoff go in that awful fashion. He was seeing in Paige, and he was trying to do what he could to get Paige back to life. That was the intention behind the Firm. The Firm wasn't meant to be a good band. The Firm wasn't meant to be anything but something that got Jimmy Page up and moving and working. And so we can be thankful for that, that it does that. And it's not a bad, it's not, they're not a bad band, and it's not a bad album. It's just not, you want so much more from a Jimmy Page band, don't you? And I you know, somebody, we were talking about Coverdale Page on For Bad Shoulders Only, and I posted the note that while I like it, I find Coverdale to be very one-dimensional as a singer, and I find that Page's entire post-Zeppelin career suffers from a lack of somebody who can actually write vocals that makes sense within his sonic structure. He's crafting, he's composing songs. He's not writing a song. He composes songs. They all over the place. They're almost classical in scope. And then the lyrics don't work that way. Somebody comes in with fairly simplistic lyrics. It is one of the things that Plant deserves a lot of credit for, is he was able to up his game to work, to write with those guys, and it makes sense, and it, you know, and Page has suffered badly from not having that guy to work with in his post Zeppelin career, and anyway, so I wrote that about Coverdale Page, and somebody else is funny. That's exactly how I feel about the Firm, and it's not a bad point. I think Paul Rodgers is a better singer than David Coverdale. Certainly got more subtlety to him than Coverdale, and some of the writing here vocally isn't bad. Midnight Moonlight's an example of, he kind of brings his game. Radioactive is an interesting kind of, it's not just a Weasel in My Pants song. But yeah, it's a valid point that I actually think it's that rhythm section that hurts Page in this one so much. The drums are a little too straight ahead. Not enough shuffle, not enough groove, and it doesn't swing enough in the drums, you know. And that awful bass. And if you got a drummer who swung a little more, and a bass player who could just lock in with them, maybe this becomes a better album just unto itself because of that. But it works. It's not bad. It is what it is, which is a mid-80s album. A lot of that bass sound is annoying in part because it's way high in the mix. And it's way high in the mix because that's what you did in the 80s. People were popping their basses. They were slapping the bass. And it was up in the mix, you know. And it was part, I very much remember it. I remember, you know, I worked in a music store. I'm a guitar player, but we used to sit around slapping the basses, learning how to do the proper bass slaps. You know, and I can still to this day do the slapping, boom, and then you grab and you kind of pop. It's a slap and pop, and I can see, you know, we all sat around learning that stuff. So it's part of the product of the time, but it's not aged poorly either. And that's probably the most interesting thing about it at this stage. So yeah, if you haven't listened to The Firm in a while, it's a good time too, 30 years on, and it's a good album. It's a good album. Not great, but it has its moments when it tips into great. And just too many of those mediocre moments that pull it back from that edge. All right, so that's it. I'm going to hang it out at that. That's... yeah, we're over an hour, so let's let you get back to your lives. That's it for Ramble on Radio, episode 85. Check rambleonradio.com for notes on this week's podcast, Led Zeppelin news and reviews, and any links mentioned in today's podcast. Follow Ramble on Radio on Facebook, Google+, and at Ramble on Blog on Twitter. You can subscribe to Ramble on Radio through iTunes. Don't forget, if you're in iTunes, leave a review. You can listen on Spreaker, Spreaker. Be sure to follow Ramble On Radio on Spreaker if you're in Spreaker. Even if you don't get Ramble On Radio, if you listen to other stuff on Spreaker but not me, listen, follow me anyway. Or, you know, if you feel inclined, go start a Spreaker account. It's free, it's easy. And follow, just to follow me. And check it out at Ramble On Radio on YouTube. I will try, the last one didn't get up on YouTube. I'll try and get that up this week. And of course, this one will get up as well. Thanks for listening to Ramble On Radio, episode 85. And keep it cool,
baby. I'm sure there'll be internet forums telling me what I'm doing.
Switch off the internet.